Good afternoon, good evening, good metal. My name's Coop and welcome to the Spoken Metal Show. This episode we sit down with Tom from Carnal Rot. And if you listen to some of the previous episodes where I talked about the Dark Earth Records first year anniversary, there's some stuff on socials where we kind of did some bits and pieces with that as well. And they were one of the bands that played. They played a kind of guerrilla setup, a DIY both death metal setup where they played in Dark Earth Records. And it was brilliant. I'd heard some stuff by Carnal Rot before. I wanted to catch them live, and now I really want to catch them live in an almost a full venue setup, and they're playing some shows soon as well. Will give me the opportunity to do exactly that. They're just a really good band and a new kind of thing they're bringing to what's going on. Different styles kind of blended together. So it's going to be really interesting to see them live. And Tom's just a super nice guy. He's got a lot to say. Really opinionated in all the best ways, and he talks really passionately about why he's doing this project, why he's in this band, and the bands he was in previously, and kind of very honestly talks about them, which is absolutely superb. And it's always nice to see a band emerging and becoming something, and I think they're going to have a really, really bright future. There's going to be some really great stuff coming from there, and I really want to catch them live. I'll probably get other members of the band as well on the show, because as a unit, they were just fucking brilliant. They were just really, really, really good. And I encourage any new bands out there that want to come on the show, please, just, DMs are always open. Get in touch with me and we'll make it happen. And it's exciting. I mean, it's nice to talk to famous people. It's nice to talk to established people, and it's nice to talk to crew, and we will do on shows to come. But it's always good to talk to new and upcoming metal bands that are just starting out, because that proves that the scene is not only existing, but thriving and growing as well. So it's always great to see that. And there's so many good bands coming up now. So many good bands. I'll try and get as many as I can on the show. But for now, please enjoy my conversation with Tom from Carnal Rot. Ladies and gentlemen, what a really quality wait. It's normally the beginning of weeks a shite, aren't they? As you either go back to work or you have to go through your emails and all that other bullshit. But now I get to sit down all a bit digitally with Tom from Carnal Rot. How are we doing, mate? All right.
Yeah, all sound, mate. Like I say, fucking knackered from the fucking move. And
you're moving house, you're working nights. You're in an amazing band. It's like you've got several plates spinning here, right, mate?
Yeah, it's taken all my effort not to take the plates off the stands and smash them against the wall.
But that's like this is life. Like this, you've got to do these many things and kind of spin these many plates. And especially to get a metal band together, it's ridiculous, you know.
Oh fucking mate, fucking. It is what it is, you know what I mean? it's a ball ache, but you know what? If you love what you're doing, then that's the best way, you know what I mean?
We've probably lost 90% of my audience who are in the States and all around the world, because they're like, hold on, there's two guys here with the thickest accents talking to each other, and it's only going to get worse. They'll have to like listen. You're gonna have to put a video up with the like the fucking closed captions on it, so we can understand what people are saying and shit. Like,
God, imagine.
So the last time we met was Dark Earth's record launch, and you played what can only be described in all of the positive ways of a fucking feral set in the middle of the record. So that was fucking excellent. That wasn't it?
That was batshit, because I just remember seeing people fucking. There were a couple of people sat in chairs by the front, and then everyone was like lining where the vinyl was. There were a couple of people up the stairs by the counter, and then there were just people sat off in the bus stop outside, just looking in the fucking windows.
I saw the best thing in the world. I saw, because it's like, it's literally opposite a bus stop. There's a bus stop literally right outside Dark Earth. People are waiting for a bus, and they're getting, all of a sudden, they're getting an extreme metal show. And there was two guys walking past, and they must have been going the fucking chippy or something or whatever. And they're walking past. Clearly, they didn't look like they were into metal. Let's say that. They didn't have any metal accoutrements on. And they were walking past, and one guy, oblivious, kept going. The other guy was like, oh, what the fuck is that? And you could tell, for a second, he was a little bit triggered there. He's a little bit like, actually, I quite like that. And his mate's like, no, you don't. No, you don't like metal. Come on. And I thought, fuck it, we nearly had him. It's like having a fucking fishing rod outside the shop trying to get the people to come to metal, like, you know. But it was boss. I thought it was great. It was a wonderful thing.
The funny thing is, when we were sound checking, you know, just testing the gear, says sound checking at a record store. It sounds fucking daft, doesn't it? But before that, we were sound checking, and then the next thing you know, this guy comes over and he's got delivery bags, you know, like he's from like Just Eat or something like that. He's popped his head in the door and he's just like, boy, what the fuck's going on? Is there a gig going on? I said, yeah, there will be in a little bit, mate. So God, I might pop my head down when I haven't got many deliveries. And we went to that takeaway, like a couple of doors up, to get something to eat. And the first thing the guy said to us was like, something like, fucking hell, you're summoning Satan down there or something.
Yes, we are.
We're trying our hardest. Like.
I love that, though. I loved it because it's like, it's so guerrilla. It's so kind of like, you know, just doing it on the fly. Like, ladies and gentlemen, at one point, quite early on, I remember, the guitarist breaks a string, and in the most metal of fucking ways, everybody kind of, like, the band, you know, because you care about your other bandmate, you want to make sure that you can he play on. So you do have to quickly ask the question, are we good here? Can we keep going? And he didn't even fucking drop a beat. He was like, I goes, I'm good, motherfucker, keep going. And I was like, oh, shit, he's going to get through this set. Whatever the fuck it takes. I was incredibly impressed by that.
Well, this will impress you even more, actually. we played a gig you may have seen in Shrewsbury at the weekend. Yeah. Played with the guys in Omega Throne and Broodmother. And Owen, that guitarist, he was actually fucking... Poor sod was on his last legs. He was dying of death. Absolutely sick as a dog, right? Not only did he play the fucking gig, he came out of work, just got straight into the shower, came straight down. He'd actually thrown up on his way home from work to his house, then to the room to help get all the gear into his car, which isn't exactly the biggest of cars. All five of us in this car with the guitars thrown over our laps at the back and the amps in the boot. Hell, mate. God, it was like a fucking clown car, like a metal clown car of like your typical death metal band trying to get to a gig. And the poor sod was on his last legs, driving to Shrewsbury from our practice room, straight to Shrewsbury. And this fucking dumb fucker had given me the wise idea of giving me the fucking aux cable, which is never a fucking good thing. Well, it depends on what your stance or what your variety of listening to music is, because my music taste is very varied. I like my death, I like my slam, like a little bit of thrash, but I also like country music. A lot of people who know me, I like Garth Brooks, James Taylor, people like that. But I also like my cheesy pop as well, you know what I mean? And like random little earworms are here on TikTok and stuff like that. Yeah, so every now and again, you'll be listening to fucking, we had like Gutalax on at one point. And then the next thing, the fucking Venga Boys came on, followed by Cascada every time we touch. And then fucking straight into, I think it was Aphotic Doom by Cattle Decapitation. And everyone's looking around the car just like, I'm not even mad. These songs are a bop. You know what I mean?
We used to play on tour. We used to play, if it was a long journey on the bus, we would play, someone would put their phone on and they would put like the Spotify suggests, like, you know, and they would just leave it. And, you know, and 90% of it's like metal and it's all, but every so often there'd be a couple of songs and you'd be like, what the fuck is this? But that's the real secret, isn't it, Tom? That like a lot of people that don't understand metal think that metal musicians solely listen to metal music. And the reality is simply that is not the case, ladies and gentlemen. Very rarely do metal bands are listening to fucking Lamb of God getting pumped up before they go out to play a show. That doesn't happen on the bus or the car ride back. You're listening to things that amuse you, and like you say, you know, metal musicians aren't one note. You like country, and we're definitely going to have to explore that, but it's just like, you know, a jam is a jam, a good song is a good song, and you could be a heavy song and still not be metal. You know, it could be a catchy song. It's like, it's interesting that metal musicians are way more open-minded, I think, than people take credit for, have way more other listening habits than metal, than maybe people who are not into metal would see metal on the, you know, looking inwards. And it's interesting that. So, I mean, God, there's so much to get through. You know, we'll start with country, because I have yet to speak to someone who had, I've spoken to someone who had interests in like jazz and pop and things, but not country. Is it like rap country? And bear with me on this. in so much as that it shares the same energies as metal. Like, so I like country as well. I'm more probably the older side of country. So Merle Haggard and kind of Johnny Cash and Chris Christopherson and the Outlaws. And that was my kind of my entry point into country. And then because I'm a guitar player, I moved into like, you know, sort of the guitar playing side of it rather than the singer-songwriter side of it. But I found that the energies were the same. That's why a lot of metalheads like Johnny Cash, because it's a very much a fuck you, I'm wearing all black, you know what I mean? Life's really tough, I'm going to sing about it. Was that how did you find country then?
That was largely through, it was through my uncle who got me into music back when I was about 12, 13 years old. He got me my first guitar. It was like a Stratocaster knockoff. And he's like the biggest music buff I know. He's been in bands all his life. He plays bass, guitar, acoustic, mandolin, and banjo, fucking all kinds. It was due to him I got into it. But him and my dad shared similar tastes when it came to like James Taylor, for example. James Taylor's a lovely fucking lyricist. His music is brilliant. I love it. It's just about just everyday things, everyday life, and you know, things he sees out on the road and stuff like that. Stories, he's a good storyteller, fantastic storyteller. Whereas I'm also into, like you, like Johnny Cash, for example. He's just like, fuck you, I'll do what I fucking want. You know what I mean? It's like my favorite song, it might be cliched as fuck, but it's A Boy Named Sue.
Yeah,
it's fucking, it's listening to that song, it's that part, my name is Sue, how do you do, now you're gonna die. Listening to the live version of that, it gets me every time. So like, it's like, if I want to chill out, it's kind of like James Taylor. Fucking, sorry, I was staring at, I've got a tattoo of Hades on my leg, I was staring at that for a second there. I've got James Woods in my head. But if I want to chill out, it's like James Taylor. If I'm kind of like in a grumpy mood, it's like Johnny Cash. So it's like, I'll stick like Ain't No Grave on or something like that. Or even like, say, Devil Driver's covers of Johnny Cash, which were a fucking belter. Especially fucking When the Man Comes Around was a fucking beat. That is a pure circle pitch.
That was the genius of Rick Rubin, that, you know, near the end of Cash's life, and Cash is like, you know, just put me in the studio, keep me working, that'll keep me alive. Rick Rubin knew that the artists that he'd influenced weren't necessarily just country or pop artists. There were a lot of like rock, alternative metal, and extreme metal artists. So he brings them back, like, you know, Outshined and Rusty Cage, and obviously very famously Nine Inch Nails' Hurt. Because the reality, I think, with country music, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Spoken Metal Show, where we're covering country for the next 25 minutes. But the reality of that is that they were dealing with, like you say, everyday things. My life isn't good. You know, I've got problems. Things are going on in my life. Life isn't a fucking bed of roses. It's not great. And I want to talk about them. And it's the same thread that you follow with the blues. You know, country and blues have a lot of similar sort of connecting tissue. And the blues basically sort of moved into rock, then rock moved into metal, and metal moved on, and off we go. So you know, it does never surprise me when someone brings up those type of artists, because it was that, like, you know, like I say, the Outlaws and Chris Christopherson was my entry point, because it was like, fuck you, no one seems to understand what I'm going through, and it's a really bad time. And that translates to metal really, really, really well.
Yeah, it does. It really fucking does. Especially if it's like fucking, you get great storytellers no matter what genre, I find. Because it's like I say, it's like I'm into, it's like country metal, middle of the road singers, fucking shit. Like, they're all, as long as they've got my taste, the only requirement for my taste is, have you got a good bit of talent behind you? Can you write a decent song? Have you got a decent story behind said song? And it's brilliant. It's like, and it could even be a fucking stupid fucking song. It's like, say, well, not stupid, but like, say, Garth Brooks, for example. Most of his songs are like dead serious, you know, like songs about, you know, going down the road, you go and fucking stealing your mum's car to go and make out with someone by the creek and shit like that.
Yeah.
But my favorite one is Friends in Low Places. Always has been Friends in Low Places. A song about getting shit-faced, going to your ex's wedding to her new husband, telling her to kiss your ass, and then fucking off back to the bar again.
I tell you what, though, I'm thinking about what you're saying about like kind of simplified lyrics and kind of real grassroots lyrics where about real situations. You know, when Hetfield talks about this, when he was doing the Black Album, they moved from Call of Cthulhu type of sort of lyrics and to a more worldview type of things that were more open to, like, you know, individual sort of situations. You know, Hetfield's a huge country fan. It's obvious he is. You know, it's obvious he's here. And he changed his kind of writing style, probably to accommodate the artist that he liked, you know, blended that in. And that's why, like, the Black Album was probably, you know, certainly the topics and the things that they were talking about were a little bit more real, a little bit more accessible. And because they were more accessible, that's probably why, you know, and they were great riffs, obviously, probably made it more, you know, there was a way in, because that's the other thing, is the people that don't listen to metal think that the lyrics are inaccessible because, like, all they're just talking about death and dying and horrible things. And they don't realise that in most of them, there is a very, very strong access point for lyrics. You know, you're a lyricist. You know, when you sit and write, you try and make it, you're writing it from your own perception as best you can, you know, either to scare yourself, to vent something, to feel something. You're writing it from that perspective, right?
Yeah, man. It's like Sample Truth, for example, by Metallica. It was one of the first songs I ever heard by them, and it's that crushing fucking riff that I first heard. I was just surfing through the music channels as a teenager after school. Fucking kick me feet up in my uniform and I put Scuzz on and Sample True comes on. And I was like, fucking sweet Jesus, that fucking riff. And then I listen to the lyrics and it's like fucking
exactly.
You're dead fucking with you. And it's just like, wow, shit, the bed. That is simple as fuck, but Christ, is it effective? You know what I mean? It's like even going on to more complicated fucking topics, it's like, say, for example, another one of my favorite, Cattle Decapitation. Over the last couple of albums, the entire theme over the last couple of albums is the inevitable, based on the inevitable death of humanity and what humanity as a whole is doing to fuck the planet up. It's like holding the mirror up going, this is what we're doing. We need to fucking stop, you know, kind of shit. But it's like, it's gotten to the point now where in the album concept anyway, the whole planet is fucked. The inevitable heat death has fucking happened. Humanity is dead. And now a new species has arisen in the new album. And fucking Christ, the lyrical content of Travis Ryan is just fucking chef kiss. Mwah. Fucking beautiful, mate.
But he's doing, you know, and it's, you know, 100% agree that, like, they are showing, like, it's incredibly serious. It's like, it's not, you know, you may think that these noises that these people are making are silly if you don't understand the genre, but it's like, listen to the lyrics and the imagery that they're creating. This is like what science fiction was doing, and Asimov was doing, was going, look, this is what it could, this is how fucking fucked we are. This is how fucked we're going to be. Look at this. Yeah. Let's explore where this is going. It's serious fucking serious shit. And it's interesting that, like, you talk about hearing a riff first and then lyrics, and kind of that draws you in even more. And you say, you mentioned a boy named Sue, that's a perfect example. I got into the riff first, that wonderful sort of country riff at the beginning. Yeah. And then it took me about 20 years after hearing it to realize what that song is about. And, you know, for anybody listening that doesn't know what that song is about, the song is about a guy called Sue who goes to look for his dad to somehow beat him up or give him a hard time about calling him Sue. And when he finally finds the guy in a bar, he's like, well, you motherfucker, you know, I'm going to fucking do you over. You fucked me over for life calling me Sue. And he's like, well, hold on. No, what I did is I give you a name that meant you had to fucking, you couldn't hide because you called Sue. People are going to come after you, make fun of you. And it toughened you up really early on. I didn't get that for 20 years. And then oh shit, now that's a good song. It's a fucking great song. And that's the thing I like about metal. And certainly Decapitation is a really good example. If you listen to the last three albums, let's say, and you can hear a theme going through thematically put together, that when you go back to it, yes, the riffs are amazing. It's a huge sound and it's amazing. But when you listen to the lyrics and you break it down, you're like, oh fucking shit, that's where the real pay dirt is, you know?
Yeah, it's like, fucking one of my favorite ones. I'm fucking, I'm very emotionally attached when it comes to music. It is the fucking world to me. And it's like, when they brought out the Anthropocene Extinction, which is two albums back, got songs like, you've got the likes of fucking Manufactured Extinction, you've got the likes of fucking Not Suitable for Life, but my favourite is Pacific Grim, one of the last tracks, and it's that last verse as like the tremolo picking's going on. I said, "We must have been blind. Our footprint steps inside, and when there's nowhere to hide, death comes with the tide." But it's the way, it's beautiful, yeah. Fucking beautifully written, but the way Travis sings it with his melodics, it's, well, if you call them melodics, it's like fucking screechy melodics, which are eerily beautiful. It's like, oh, it hits you right in the fucking feels, and it just, mate.
And it stays with you. It stays with you. It puts a thing in your mind. You know, you want to go and read more about things. And this is the other thing about metal that we constantly come up with, is that there's some kind of dumbing down, that metal can't talk about high level concepts and things that we totally do and have been for, you know, 40, 50 years. I've been dealing with stuff that, but it's because people see it as inaccessible. It's like a big book on a shelf. It's like, I know the information's there, but how the fuck do I start reading that? I mean, what were the first bands that you were hearing then when you were growing up, when you were starting out with metal? What was the first metal bands then?
Well, first I started off with, it was actually my dad started me off with punk, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Started off with, like I said, Clash, Sex Pistols, you know, usual gateway punk bands, shall we say. When I started getting into metal, when I started deviating from there, it was the likes of Black Sabbath, Ozzy Osbourne, Judas Priest, you know, typical kind of like new wave of British heavy metal kind of stuff, even Maiden, you know what I mean, things like that. And then my dad used to be a fella who used to chip PlayStations, you know, so you could play, so, you know, do ditch the very first PlayStation. But he did CDs, he burned CDs on the side, well, and he gave me the big printout of lists, and I'm looking at these bands, and there's a couple of bands I've circled here that I think you might like. It's like, oh, you know, they got the Judas Priest, yeah, go ahead, I'll have that. Sex Pistols, Greatest Hits, go ahead. Rammstein. Yeah, go on. I've not listened to these before. Yeah, fuck it. Go on. I'll give them a go. You know, shit like that. And it was the Riser album that first got me into the likes of that. It's also the likes of Thanks to Kerrang! And Scuzz TV. It was like Korn, when I first heard Here to Stay, and that riff kicked in. And I was like, fucking me heart fell out my ass. It was just like, fucking Jesus, that's heavy as shit. Used to collect Kerrang. I still got actually an original VHS tape from an issue of Kerrang years ago, and it's got like
they put a VHS tape on the front of the magazine.
Yes, mate. Fuck it. I've still got it in a box. I've still got it in a box here.
It's got cardboard sleeve. Yeah.
Yeah, mate. Yeah. And then I'd like it had the videos of, like, Times Like These by the Foo Fighters.
Can you imagine that now, going to someone? Here's a magazine for a fucking kickoff. Here's a magazine with this, and it's like a fucking, like almost like an A4 size piece of paper. Video on top of video cassette. What the fuck are you playing that in? You know, and you have to fucking rewind it. It's like, exactly. You know.
I was like, fucking. I took it. I remember taking it out that day at school, and I was, what the fuck are they thinking? Putting me. On the front, because it was only about like fucking £2 at the time, you know, and you get a free tape with it, and it's like, Christ, at least cost a fucking tenner, what the shit. It's like going through stuff like that. Obviously Kerrang! And Scuzz made things a bit more, it kind of like opened the world to me before I had like internet access and shit like that, and it was just like, wow, fucking, you know, getting into the likes of Linkin Park and Slipknot, Korn, and all the bands, the big bands that Kerrang! Used to put on, and Scuzz used to put on some of the heavier stuff too. And that's how I took it from there, and it's just kind of evolved since then into all kinds of fucking deviations of metal, you know, fucking, especially the likes of fucking death metal, grind, and slam are big favourites of mine, massive big favourites of mine, like got your carcass, your napalm death, cattle, Cannibal Corpse, obviously decapitated, fucking love decapitated. Then you've got like slam bands, you've got like fucking, you know, like it's like they just look through a medical glossary and just got to say, oh, fucking, you know, like fucking epicardiectomy and stuff like that. Fucking, I still like listening to fucking Operation Cunt Destroyer, even though they're no longer active and shit like that. And it's fucking one of the best gigs I've ever seen was Operation Cunt Destroyer, when my old band played at them at the Lomac years ago. It was the launch of Crepitation's fucking The Violence of the Slams album, yeah. And Operation Cunt Destroyer were on the lineup. And at the time, they were only two man. It was just a guitarist and vocalist and a shitload of samples. They walked on to the fucking Venga Boys for a fucking start. That was fucking enough for me to go, yeah, I'm going to have a fucking good time here. And fucking, then the Inflatables got broken out. And it was just like fucking pitting with Inflatables, just swatting people over
that's
the head.
That's how you know, ladies and gentlemen, if you're at your first slam or grind or death gig, you know you're going to get fucked up is how much comedy is going on. So lots of comedy. It's going to be heavy ass pit. That's how it works. If you like, the guitarist comes out in a Hawaiian shirt, you're dead. If they bring out Inflatables, game over. If they're telling jokes or they have funny samples, you're probably going to break a limb. That's just it. The way it is. Because has to be, because otherwise it can't always be that like fucking intense. Yeah. You know what I mean?
That's what attracted me to slam at first, yeah. was the samples. And yeah. It's something I've always wanted to do, because you hear some fucking funny shit. It's like fucking one of the songs from Operation Cunt Destroyer. It's got Vaginal Parasite from A Dirty Hermaphrodite. And it opens up with like a B-movie track of someone, of this distressed woman going, Josh cut off his penis because something came out of my vagina. But it cuts to fucking Still Game, where he goes, fuck off, you spooky bitch, and then all you hear is gutturals and blast beats. And the first time I heard it, I was in bits for at least half an hour.
Isn't it the goal of every sort of slam and grind band, isn't it the goal of every one of those bands to do this? Have you laugh insanely and then pull the grimace face straight after, so you're like, oh, that's amazing. They go, oh, that's heavy as fuck. And it's like, it's almost like a smash cut. It's like the perfect goal of doing that. I remember when I heard the sample, I think it was Crepitation, where it's a sample of the Chuckle Brothers, and then the riff comes in. And I was like, oh, shit, laughing. And then immediately the pit's off, and I'm like, oh, shit. It's like, it seems to be the goal. It's like, now, it's not a race to make the heaviest thing, although that's still on. It's also a race to make the funniest thing as well, and smash cut them together.
Exactly. I love shit like that. I love bands that can do shit like that. It's like fucking I'm gonna go and see Gutalax down in London in October. Fucking, I can't remember the name of the festival. It's gonna fucking plague me. I know where I'm going to. I know Basement Torture Killing's playing as well. Like Rectal Smegma, Sewer Trench, Snufffest. Sorry, there we go. Ooh. Snufffest, I got it. In the Black Heart. My bandmates went to Bloodstock this weekend. It's only me and our drummer didn't go, and the rest of them went. And I said, you better be going to see Gutalax on Saturday. I said, you were going to laugh so fucking hard. Yeah. You were going to see so many people bouncing around in a circle pit while simultaneously waving toilet brushes around and TPing the stage with bog roll. You're going to be in bits, but you're going to be torn as to whether laugh or bang your head.
Yeah,
it's like Beetlejuice as well. The first time I saw them, Bloodstock 2011, we missed about half the set. I'm stood outside the Sophie stage, and all they hear is, this next one goes out to George Corpse Grinder Fisher and his huge fucking neck. This is no neckahedron. And the song starts. Laughing to bang me head.
They were wonderful. They played the Outpost in a very sort of close quarters gig. And this is how the gig went. It was like 2 minutes of comedy stand-up routine almost. And then 4 minutes of a song that takes your fucking face off. 2 minutes of comedy, 4 minutes of Face Off. It was just like, it was like that. And it was so, like, the song would finish and I'd just be laughing my fucking head off and then back into it. And it was like, that's something that I wish I could show to someone who wasn't into the scene. I'd be like, look, please just come for like 10 minutes and just watch this. And you will get it. And you'll, like you say, you know, you'll be laughing your head off 1 minute, bouncing the next, not moshing, bouncing, jumping around, chanting silly things. There's way more than the surface thing of everybody's just fighting and it's just kind of, I wish you could show the non-initiated that some more, you know?
Yeah, it's like I did that once to my nan, actually, when my nan was still alive. Used to go to dad on Sunday morning. She'd make us a bacon butty, a cup of tea. We'd help her with the crossword. But she always used to love listening to my stories from Bloodstock. She loved it. And it's like the year was, I think it was 2014, and it was the year at the time, anyway, Evil Scarecrow had got the biggest crowd participation to Crabulon.
Crabulon, yeah.
And I was waiting for the video to come out. It was like the weekend after Bloodstock. And I went to see me now, and the video would come up online of this. And I was just like, yeah, and you know, you're always asking me. And she's like, yeah, go ahead, lads. And I was like, yeah, go on. I'd say, yeah, have a look at this. And I showed her the video, and I skipped it to the bit where he goes, "Arise, my mighty pink army." Scuttle left, scuttle right. I'm a nan. He used to be a fucking RE teacher, bear in mind. Highly religious woman. Looked at this video, and just her eyes just widened and went, fucking Jesus. Look at that. Were you in there? And I was pointing out to the crowd. I was right in front of where the disabled bit is by the sound desk. And she went, well, I don't quite understand it, but it looks like you had a fucking laugh anyway, lad. And
I was in said crowd too. I'd been working, doing some bits and pieces, and I travelled over in a van with Evil Scarecrow at that particular show. And I was in the crowd for it because, like, I've got to see the reaction. And it was wonderful because you were there. So it was midday, the like kind of mid-afternoon band. It was perfect setting. And it was a really good turnout for them. And there was loads of kids, where the initial sort of crowd is, there's a little bit step back. There was loads of kids on people's shoulders and stuff, all doing the Crabulon thing. And I think it was during End of Level Boss or something like that. I think it was during one of them. The kids were loving it. And I was like, I wish more people who didn't know, understand or see metal saw this, because it's not what they thought it was. You know, when you say Bloodstock and you're like, oh my God, it's fighting and blood and white Vikings and shit and wildness. But it wasn't. It was like kids on watching a metal version of Peppa Pig. And it was just it was amazing. It was amazing. Yeah. And it's like, it's those things that, you know, that misunderstanding that is the thing that I often try to put up when I show people videos of gigs and stuff. Yeah. And it looks like a bit intense. I always try and belie it with videos of people, you know, just enjoying themselves, because that's the thing, you know, they're just having a good time. And more, but you know, how often do you do this, Tom? You go to a gig, I laugh almost as much as I headbang. I'm laughing with what they're saying, people shouting stuff out from the crowd. There is wonderful energy at a metal gig that I don't know if exists in other music as much as this, you know. And it's something that I just wish more people could see, you know.
Yeah, man. I'm totally with you there. It's like I can take that back to back when the Crazy House was still open, for example. You used to get fucking, if anyone who's listening will remember the fucking Crazy House, remember the K1 was the metal floor, and obviously it was the first floor that anyone comes to, regardless of whatever floor you go into, like the indie floor or the fucking cheesy pop floor up at the top. And every now and again, like the regulars who were on the K1 used to get the piss taken out of them by a couple of chavs who come down thinking they're funny, pretending to headbang on the stage and shit like that. It's like, you know, kind of like, all right, mate, fuck off, you've had your fun, go on, shoo, off you go, you know, that kind of thing. But I find it really funny is the scared that they used to get when me and a couple of my mates, we used to get bored on K1 occasionally. We used to just go, do you want to go and bang to Down with the Sickness? Ah, I can't be arsed tonight. Let's go see what's going up on K2. It's like, yeah, sad, all right. And like, say, Gay Bar to be on by Electric Six, which I fucking love. So naturally, we go mental to fucking that. But then we go up to K3, and like say LMFAO would be on, or Gangnam Style would be on, and me and my mates would just, we'd get into it, we'd do the dance step for fucking step. And the amount of fucking people that would just look at these fucking big, scary, fucking heavily tattooed, bearded people, and then this wee skinny one next to them, who was me, would just be like, "Hey, them fucking dirty gots are dancing better than us. What the fuck's going on?" You know,
like, how do they know our music? Like,
I like to show that just because we look fucking, fucking weird and fucking wonderful, it doesn't mean that we don't enjoy the same things as what 90% of the fucking population do. You know what I mean? Yeah. So the amount of times I've turned up to fucking Pop World and scared the living fuck out of people for dancing to fucking Aqua.
That was the wonderful thing about the Crazy House, or the K as it was known. I mean, we probably didn't do it any favours. Way back in the day, ladies and gentlemen, the K, or the Crazy House, was a three, is now, or when it's whenever it's open, is three floors. It wasn't always three floors, but it was a three-floor massive building in central Liverpool, which was largely rock and metal predominance. You used to have, you know, Corners played there and all kinds of bands play there. Outside, I remember this, they had the white lines of where bodies are, you know, when a body's been picked up and the police put them around on the floor. You could never do that now. But anyway, it was on three floors, ladies and gentlemen. And like Tom says, the first floor was like metal and extreme music and whatever. Then the second floor was very indie orientated and, you know, alt rock occasionally. And then the third floor was very dancey and very pop and all the rest of it. And one of the wonderful things that that club did was that it threw all the fans of those type of music together. So to go to certain bars, you had to go past certain floors. To go to certain toilets, you had to go to certain ones. If you got bored on a particular floor, they would play two or three songs that you didn't like. You would find yourself navigating around, and every so often you would see a goth girl with a guy that was clearly not into metal or goth, because they just found each other attractive. You'd see a guy dancing on the top floor with you know, headbanging wildly to a Taylor Swift. Well, it wasn't Taylor Swift then, it was Christina Aguilera and things like that. And it would mix up, wouldn't it? It would mix up, and every so often we'd get one of them and they'd get one of us, and we'd have this wonderful mixing party. It wasn't a separate club. And I love that. I miss that.
You got the occasional dickhead, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
They were funny. Every club's got the occasional dickhead. But it's like, for the most part, it's like, most people, as you say, you get people drifting. It's like, people had to come past the first floor, the metal floor, to get out of the fucking place.
Yeah.
Every now and again, it was a beauty to see sometimes, if I was sat in the back room, watching people go down the stairs, because I occasionally like to watch people fall over and make flat of themselves, because I'm petty like that. it used to be such a laugh, but we used to get the occasional one who'd go, "Oh, hang on." You know, like, say if something was playing, especially, I noticed it used to revolve around the likes of, say, Rob Zombie, Nine Inch Nails, Rammstein, stuff you can, like, proper fucking get your groove on too, you know what I mean? Yeah, it's like fucking Super Beast to be on, or fucking Du Hast to come on, when the infamous times when everyone used to do the Macarena on the K1 stage to Du Hast.
When System of the Down played, and everybody went up on the smaller stage and started doing the whole movements to that. You remember that?
Yeah, man, I remember that. I remember I used to whine. If he's probably going to listen to this as well, he's probably going to kick me head in the next time I fucking see him. But JJ, he used to DJ on the K1. And every now and again, just to wind him up, I would do either the Macarena or Crabulon. Not the Crabulon dance, sorry, the Robototron dance, you know, where you got to do the perfect fucking square.
Yeah.
And every now and again, it's like you put like Closer by Nine Inch Nails on. And if I can get the beat right, if it's got that same beat, I will do the Macarena to it. I will do the Robototron dance to it, just because I fucking can, because I think it'd be funny. And he used to fling beer mats at me and all kinds of shit, like leaning over the fucking DJ booth, going, "Fucking pack it in."
One of the things that happened with as well is that musically it started to blend. So I remember being on the very top floor, and they played Limp Bizkit's Faith. I remember hearing that on the top one. Wow. I was like, "Oh, that's interesting." And I remember that one of the first times being on the first floor when they played Limp Bizkit, Yeah. And people saw their arse. And there was people who were like boycott me at the side of the, went off the stage. I remember Linkin Park, the first time he played Linkin Park, people were boycotting it because new metal was seen as like somehow fucking real metal up. Can you believe that? I kept it alive for like 10 years. And it's it was weird that, you know, initially there was this reticence, you know, especially with new metal, where they were like, oh no, you can't have a fucking turntables in metal. What the fuck? What the fuck? You can't have that. You can't have rapping in metal. Imagine. And then it takes like a band like Slipknot who go, no, we're using, Sid's using fucking turntables. That's the fucking end of it. And it's going to be heavy as shit. Deal with it. Yeah. And it was funny to see that. Like,
That's what I love about metal, though, is that people in the genre are willing to fucking expand.
Yeah.
The not just the taste, but the playing styles as well. It's like, like you say, fucking people going, oh, fucking people are bringing turntables in, they're bringing rapping into metal. It's like, yeah, and it's going to be fucking boss. Shut the fuck up. You know what I mean? It's like you say with Slipknot, it's like, yeah, I'm going to bring fucking turntables into this. I'm going to bring a sampler into this. We're going to have three separate fucking vocalists and a random man in a clown mask who's just going to twat a fucking beer keg all over the stage with a baseball bat. Have you got a fucking problem with that?
But it's, it's like, I think we've moved past in terms of metal. There are still gatekeepers. I think there's still elitists. There's still some of those people out there. But I think now we've realized, probably more than any other genre of music, we've realized that in order for metal to survive and thrive, it needs to constantly look at itself and constantly go, well, hold on, is this getting a bit stale? Okay, let's what else can we do? You know, it's like, can we reinvent stuff? Can we bring stuff in? Okay, only yesterday, Skindred, I think they got to number two. It was a shame they didn't get to number one. That's a ragga metal band by their own definition. Nearly got to the top spot in the album charts. Why? Because we welcomed in that style of music into metal and we're like, no, similar vibes. Let's bring that all in as well. And it just keeps metal alive. It just does that, you know, and then it increases that we love the stuff that was classic and that can get reinvented then in safety and comfort. And it's the reason why I believe metal is eternal is because we've realized very quickly that we welcome new people in for a kickoff. The minute you want to welcome with open arms, we look after the people that were in our scene and we support it, you know, way more than I believe any other music. You know, we saw that with the fucking Dark Earth Records. We saw that. You know what I mean? People showing up to support a record store.
Exactly. And that's just local fucking stuff. We're not talking about even the fucking, like, say, like, even fucking big mainstream bands, the fucking diehards that they've got. You know what I mean? It's like fucking, I myself, as most people know, massive Machine Head fan. Everyone knows this. I've seen them fucking 25 times. Live, I fucking love them. I've got the signatures
Tom,
on the back.
Tom, ladies and gentlemen, has the Machine Head logo thing on it on his face. There you go. So you know, it's front and center.
And the signatures on the back of my leg as well. From where I met them at a meet and greet, I travelled all the way down to Cardiff to meet them. But there are fans who are bigger. I'm not ashamed to say there are fans who are bigger than me. It's like fucking Phil Demmel when he was still part of the band. He's got a bar in San Francisco now. There was a girl from Manchester who I met once or twice at these gigs, and she was a bigger fan than me, so much so that she went over to San Francisco to see Dave McLean and Phil Demmel's last two shows with Machine Head and even partied at Phil's bar afterwards with them. It's like fucking, but seeing it in a local condensed setting where it's just like, you know, bands are just starting out, things like that, seeing the scene come together. And it's like, we're all fucking, like, we're all in this together type shit. Not in a fucking Tory sense, you know what I mean? But fucking, we're all, because fuck that. But, you know, we're all
I believe
in this,
it's like, obligatory to say on every Liverpool or Northwest podcast, fuck the Tories.
Fuck the Tories.
Not that I'm a political podcast in any way, but still, fuck them.
But even bands of different genres, because, like, even with our band now, with Carnal, One of our biggest fans, I'm going to give him a little shout out dead quick, is actually Junta, who are more hardcore band, who I didn't think at the time when we played that gig in the Quarry recently, I didn't know how well hardcore and death metal had fucking mixed, you know, because...
Really, Tom? Like... Did you really not see that? I saw that coming.
I'm socially blind, mate.
It's the reason I say it is because we talk about country. I talked about rap. I talked to rap, would rap a lot about a lot of metalheads. And hardcore is just, it's the same energies. It's the same energies, respecting the people around you. You're respecting people's values, looking after your own, looking after venues, looking after promoters, working with them. And then, you know, and then really aggressive music and kind of wanting to get that out. There's lots of similar energies. So, you know, that's why you get bands like Converge and things like that, because they it just makes sense. So I saw a lot of that coming together, and I've never been surprised by that. Like, you know, and they're a great example of a band like that. And, you know, so it's, I see you two on the same bill all live long day, you know, totally.
No, fucking, I have got mad fucking respect. Mad respect for fucking the likes of Junta and shit like that, and bands like that, because it's just like, it's good to see bands of different genre. You know, we might not exactly be the same genre, the lyrical fucking concept may not be exactly the same and shit like that, but it's just good to see all of that coming together in one place and supporting each other, and just everyone's getting on, everyone's fucking rooting for everyone else and bigging everyone up and shit like that. It's fucking, it's beautiful.
It's empowering, man. It's empowering.
It is,
Tom,
mate.
It gives me faith
in humanity, which is...
Was Machine one of the first bands? Machine one of the first bands that you really fell in love with that became yours. Yeah. Was that band? Was it with like Bare My Eyes? That was it from the offset, or did it take a little bit longer?
It was actually, I didn't discover them. I didn't actually discover them until it was watching Kerrang again one day. I didn't discover them until I was in school watching Kerrang, and I think it was fucking, I can't remember what fucking, it wasn't even that actually. Sorry, no, it wasn't Kerrang, it was something else, but I think one of my mates played a song by them, and I just fell in love with it immediately. It was something off of The More Things Change.
Oh, okay.
It was something off The More Things Change, actually. It was the first song I'd heard, one of the first songs I'd heard by them. It was fucking... struck a nerve.
Right.
It struck a nerve off that album, because it was just, you hear that rumble and bass opening, and then fucking that didn't, and then the vocals just fucking belt in straight away, and the fucking drums start fucking, it's like before you can even blink, you are in a fucking shit show of fucking holy hell. If I was in a pit right now, I would be fucking dead.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like
people don't necessarily remember this, but when they first started, I'm talking the Chris Kontos days, when they first came over to UK and we really adopted them, we really kind of put our arms around them. At that time, the world was looking for the next Slayer. The world was looking for the next Metallica. They were looking for the next heir apparent to the throne. And, you know, at one point that would have been Lamb of God. The same thing happened to them. Trivium had the same thing. But Machine Head had this thing where it felt like they were going to be, and they are, obviously they're massive, there's huge metal band, but they, it really felt like they were going to be the heir apparent, like the next Metallica and the next things. And so they blew up so quickly in the UK. I remember the first couple of shows being fairly well attended, and then by the end of the tour they couldn't get out of venues. The fucking place was getting swamped, you know. This was the Davidian and Old were just coming through on heavy rotation and stuff, and it was ridiculous. And then for me, I mean, I'd loved them since then. My missus was a huge fan. I got, by osmosis, I kind of got into them as well. But it was really kind of later on, I really fell in love with them. Like Aesthetics of Hate was a big song for me because of what the meaning behind it and stuff with Dimebag. But then did that kind of, because you're a vocalist, right? So did you decide to become a vocalist because of that? Or what pushed you in that direction? Had you already made your mind up? Or
it was... being fair, it was a mix at the time. When I first started writing stuff, this was long before I'd even gotten a band together for the very first time. I used to write lyrics anyway and stuff like that. And it was listening to some of my favourite artists at the time. Obviously, it's like for taking lyrical content, like lyrical idea writing styles from the likes of Machine Head. Chimera were a big one as well. some of their work on the likes of Impossibility of Reason, Your Hatred, Power Trip, even Stig Murder. I fucking love that fucking. So it's just the relentlessness of the double bass kicks on the drums. It's just fucking wow. It's fucking wow. You know what I mean? And hearing people like that, listening to the lyrical content and shit like that. It was for me one of the main catalysts was the Through the Ashes of Empires album by Machine Head. What a lot of people who know me know, the very first Machine Head tattoo I got on my left forearm was actually the opening lines to the chorus to Imperium, which is Hear Me Now, Words I Vow, No Fucking Regrets. The second I heard that song off that album, when I listened to the album the first time, it's the first track. Fucking Jesus. It hit me so hard in the fucking feels. I wanted to cry and punch a hole in a brick wall at the same fucking time. It's just fucking... And I just went, in my head, something just went, this. You need to do this. You need to write shit like this. And then as my tastes got more varied, obviously with the likes of, say deathcore, metalcore, death metal, and shit like that, it takes from a variety of feelings from the likes, fucking wanting to tear someone's fucking head off to fucking trying to reconcile with people and shit like that. And I just love the variation. That's one thing I love about metal. It's just you can go from one extreme to the next. And you don't really get fucking... I know some of the elitists judge you for it, but for the majority, most people are just like, oh, you're like fucking... you're like Killswitch and you're like fucking Infants Annihilator. Brilliant. That's boss. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I love that shit. I love it. Even Infants Annihilator shit.
It is always that kind of thing with two metalheads when they meet for the first time. They have this like little sort of jousting session of like, who do you like? Yeah, it's like, oh, who do you like? And you start at the surface level with the easy wins. So like you say, like Killswitch Engage. Yeah, of course, like Killswitch Engage. And you might throw, what about In Flames? You like In Flames? And, and then you try and race to the bottom then. And it's like, okay, let's see how fucking heavy and dark they go. And you go
who
all
likes
through, and
the
it's
most
like,
obscure shit.
Yeah. And you try and kind of race each other in a really friendly way, but it's never like, it's never like, oh, you like them, I don't like them. It's not about that. Yeah. What you're trying to find, ladies and gentlemen, metalheads will hopefully attest to this, is you're trying to find a band you haven't heard of. Nothing gives me more pleasure than hearing of a band I've not heard of before. When someone goes, do you like XYZ or whatever it may be? And I go, what? And I go, oh, you haven't heard them? They're fucking second album. What, they're on a second album? It's like, oh, shit. So you go to your streaming service, and there's like seven albums by a band, and you're like, oh my God, this is fucking amazing.
It's a treasure trove, isn't it? New earworms for you.
A classic example of that. Like, I was talking to someone, and they were like, oh, it's kind of like Fifth for an Autopsy. And I was like, who? And they're like, Fifth for an Autopsy. And I should have known it. And I was like, oh shit. Go back. Okay, there's a whole load of fucking treasure trove I've got to delve into. And it's brilliant. I don't see... A lot of people see when this new music comes out, it's like, oh, there's so much music. There's too much. I can't handle it. It's too much noise. I don't see it that way. I'm like, let's fucking go. What's the next album? Come on,
Fucking right. You want to see what direction the fucking band takes next. You know what I mean? You want to see, does it carry on in the main vein? Does it get heavier? Does it get lighter? Did they start doing weird shit with the music? Who knows? You won't know unless you fucking listen. You won't know unless you carry
100%.
On.
And it's like when they talk to the famous film directors and they'll go, okay, we're talking to Quentin Tarantino or Francis Ford Coppola or someone, a big film director, and they talk about their body of work. They talk about their first films and their films through this period and through this period. And that's the thing, is that bands aren't one album. They're maybe the album that you've got into or was famous. But there's many... We just mentioned In Flames there. Think about that. Like, Christ, what, 17 albums or something? And they go through radical changes based on what was going on politically, what was going on within the band. That's exciting to me to see that and see that change. And, to bring it back home... We're talking now, the band is Carnal Rot, ladies and gentlemen. I'm talking to Carnal Rot and Tom. And if you go on the streaming services, they only have two songs out, and this is kind of a new band. But because that's the tip of the iceberg here. There's much more going on beneath that. So what was the first time you kind of like moved into a band situation then, Tom? What happened there?
First time, first band situation. Oh God, we're going back some years now. was actually Gods of War. If you ever remember that,
don't. No.
Kind of like very Amon Amarth themed.
Okay.
Very Amon Amarth themed kind of metal, which was cool. Which was cool in of itself. The recruitment process I thought was funny as fuck because. It was fucking, I think it was the singer, the bassist, and the guitarist and bassist who later became friends with, who came into another project, actually saw me just moshing out on the K1 by myself. I just thought, one night, I just went, fuck it, I'm going to be a one-man fucking party, and went for it. And the next thing I know, I've got these three guys around me like this, and they're all wearing the same T-shirts, Red Gods of War on it, and they just went, on the off chance, just went, pulled me aside, just went, do you sing or do you play guitar by any chance? And I went, yeah, I do both, actually, yeah. He was like, come for the rehearsal with us. And I was like, okay. You know, just fucking randomly. I'm fucking half cut at this point, trying to headbang to fucking, I think at the time it was fucking Hostile, if memory serves. And so I came down and, you know, got introduced to the guys. Like, yeah, you remember us when we were a bit more kind of like fucking, well, we were a bit more shit-faced. I was like, yeah, yeah. I was like, oh, what do you want me to do? So yeah, I'll try it out on vocals first. But, yeah, all right. Tried out on vocals. Next time
wait,
I came
wait,
back.
Is this the first time you've sung in front of someone?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
that
shit.
That was the first time I'd ever sung in front of someone. Because they already had a vocalist, but they wanted a second. So I was like, okay, I'll give it a try. And I gave it a blast. The next time I came in, this way, I'll bring your guitar with you this time. I said, yeah, okay, thinking I'm going to be playing and singing. No, they just wanted me playing. I was like, okay, bit odd, but yeah, I'll go with it. We played one gig in the Zanzibar that I remember. We played one gig. I don't remember most of it because we went to the Swan beforehand.
The Swan, ladies and gentlemen, is a famous drinking emporium not too far from the Zanzibar. It's often frequented by metal musicians.
Yeah. Okay, so we did the typical thing of load in, sound check, straight to the bar, and then eventually remember that we're about to go on, and then went around to the venue. I don't remember much of that. I remember playing the songs right, but I just remember staggering. Just like left, right, center, just fucking wobbling about, like pushing the fucking vocalist out the way of the microphone to sing myself on occasion and shit. And it didn't work out in the end, obviously. It didn't work out in the end.
Needless to say,
I can't imagine why. I can't imagine why.
You only played one show with them?
Yeah, yeah. Just the one.
Did they sack you? Did they go, you're fucking crazy?
The singer had actually said it was the rest of the band that wanted me out, and he was trying to defend my corner, saying, oh, no, we need, no, let him stay. It turns out it was the rest of the guys wanting to keep me in and him not wanting to, not wanting to have me there. I'm trying so hard not to. But I don't want a name drop. I'm not a fucking.
Yeah,
I don't
it's
want,
not about that.
You know
yeah,
what,
yeah.
I don't want a bitch. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Trying to keep things positive, as the missus says. You know
what
I mean?
Did that light a fire though, Tom? Did you do that and you sing in front of someone for the first time, and then you go on stage for the first time, and I assume there's an audience there, and there's a reaction. Yeah. Did you come away from that thinking, I can do it? I should Absolutely. Be doing it, and I feel as though I want to do it. Did that start it, or did it take
yeah,
some time?
The bug had well and truly bitten my fucking... Not just bitten me, I'd bitten my fucking leg off going... Remember all that writing shit that I told you to my brain's going? Remember all that writing I told you to do while you're influenced by your favourite lyricists? This is what we need to do now. We need to now get on stage with a microphone in hand and an audience in front of us and tell weird and fantastical stories in odd guttural and high-pitched screechings, you know?
So what did you do? They go, okay, but you're not right for us, and you go, okay, that's cool. You part ways. What happens then?
After that, it was about a couple of years where not much happened. We started up another project. Two friends of mine, one who's extremely... talented electronic musician. He's one of his favorite bands, Fear Factory. He's a lovely lad, and he's sitting on fucking treasure troves of shit at the minute that I keep trying to get him to go, release it. This music is fucking amazing. You know, you're just letting it go to waste. So at the time, we formed what would eventually become Cryocell, because that's how the band started with.
That's where I come in, because that's the band I first recognised you from, yeah, Cryocell, yeah.
And it originally started off with him on vocals, and there was me and another friend of ours on guitar. But it came to a point where our vocalist friend, his anxiety got a bit. He's been in bands previously, but his social and like performance anxiety got a bit too much for him. But he said to us, carry on. I want to see where you take it. I want to see what happens. Hmm. You know, kind of thing. I'm going to step away. But floor's all yours, lads. You do what you fucking want. You know what I mean? That kind of thing. And eventually we found more musicians, two of them ironically being from Gods of War, the guitarist and the bassist I mentioned earlier. The very talented Mr. Richard Hale on bass, back and vocal. Always sing Richard's praises because he's a hell of a bass player. Hell of a bass player, and even his vocals are fucking boss, short, gruff, guttural, to the fucking point. Always fucking loved it when me and him could fucking go off on one with Cryo when we had our vocals combined. It was fucking beautiful. And obviously Cryo started taking off.
When I saw Cryocell, I'm trying to think of the venue. I want to say the Picket, but it wasn't. I remember thinking it was a very finished sort of thing already. Like, you had a really good idea of what you wanted to do. It seemed very on the set. That probably isn't the case, but to me, it seemed very finished and very kind of like, we know what we're doing. Everybody seemed on the same page fairly quickly. I don't know, is that the case, or am I way off with that?
We went through some deviations, because like, it did start off when we had our original vocalist who helped us join. It was more industrial metal. So we were thinking more along the lines of Fear Factory, Static X, Rammstein.
Yeah.
Bit of Ministry thrown in there as well. But then as we started listening to heavier and heavier stuff, it's like we got into, I think it was something like the likes of Behemoth and stuff next. So it kind of took a turn towards that. And then it started taking a turn more towards the death metal, where it eventually landed on with some slammy influences involved in it, and that's eventually what we settled on. So it did take some twists and turns. One of the members left. It wasn't for him. It was a musical difference, but we didn't hold it against him. Obviously, it's kind of like, it was more a case of, well, you know, doors always open. You know what I mean? If you want to come back, fair enough. Because he didn't like the musical direction, which is fair. He was more into like his proggy, tech metal kind of stuff. You know, kind of stuff. It's fair play. Nothing wrong with that. And then we settled on the more slammy death metal stuff. We stayed as a four-piece, and then we stayed as, more slam and death metal orientated after that.
You played some good shows with that. I'm trying to remember. My memory's terrible going back. I did a recent show with Alex, and it was around that time. We were talking when he was in a band that I started to see some of this extreme music. You were one of, you know, I don't know if you know this, you were one of those first sorts of extreme bands from the Northwest, the kind of the newer wave of it. You were amongst those bands, you know, that were part of it. You know, you might not believe that, but that's the case. You know, did it feel like you were, was there lots of other bands at that time you could kind of hook up with and play shows with? Or did you feel kind of still a little bit, you know, there's no one kind of like us or we fit in with?
Around the time, there were more bands around the vein of, like, say, thrash. For example, you had your likes of, we had Reaper, who I believe they've been around for only a short amount of time before that. We had likes of OMV, One More Victim, more hardcore type stuff. There was a couple of symphonic bands knocking about as well that I remember, a couple of symphonic metal bands that were knocking about. And then the likes of Exhumation started up from there, and it's like, oh wait, we've got another band to join on locally, you know, with a bill on us and stuff like that. And obviously, I was like, we already had the likes of like we played with Crepitation before. We played at that dead album launch that I mentioned earlier. We've even bands who've visited town as well. It's like Cranium, fucking came right. big fucking slammy death metal deal. We got on opening for them. Psychroptic, all the way from fucking Australia, played in the Pilgrim.
The Pilgrim,
that was a very fucking.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's upstairs. The Pilgrim's a great pub in Liverpool, but it's the upstairs section of it. Is this tiny sort of second pub upstairs, and like, you know, I don't know what the cap is, probably about 40, 50 people, and the ceiling would move and the floor would move when you were in there. I fucking love that place, like, yeah.
Yeah, man, it was a messy, very messy, sweaty gig, that, because it was just so many people packed into such an area. It's like, especially when Psychroptic took the stage. I want to say the stage. It was just a part of the floor that was separated.
It's just another part of the floor. Yeah, it wasn't raised or anything. Yeah, yeah. Did you feel as though you were getting your stride with Cryocell? Then you felt that vocally, you were like, okay, this is what I want to do, and I'm getting to where I want to be here, and I'm putting that across, you know, because like I say, there was a confidence to remember when seeing you. There was a confidence in what you were doing, if only from yourself. Did that feel that way? Did you feel as though, you know, we're getting some things across here?
Yeah, it's definitely, I wouldn't say I'd settled into my niche, shall we say. Right. It's more a case of it's like I'd laid the foundation, as it were, for the vocal style that I wanted to approach.
Right.
And then, obviously, as time grew on, I kind of, like, I tried to expand on that, like, emulating vocalists and vocal styles that I preferred, seeing what kind of a mix I could put on it. As most metal musicians are bound to do, you know, you imitate and emulate greats, but you put your own spin on it, obviously. So... yeah, with the likes of Cryo, I was definitely getting my guttural and my pig squeal style down a lot better than what I had done previously, and that was definitely the direction that I'd wanted to go in. So yeah, I did. I'd say yeah, you're right.
It seemed that way, you know, from what I can remember of seeing you. So what happened then with Cryocell? Why did it kind of stop? And what happened with the next stage?
Well, like I said, it's a tricky subject, because those who know me, they've heard the full story. The page is still up on the page is still up on Facebook, as far as I'm aware. But it came down to a case of. I want to say musical differences.
Yeah.
Shall we say.
Okay.
I'm going to put it down to a case of musical differences. I don't want to go into too much detail, to be honest, because once I start, I won't stop.
But it came to a natural conclusion. It was okay. It's time to move on.
Other people had other projects on the go that they were more excited about.
Right.
But, you know, like fleshing out and things like that. And it kind of like things just kind of fell by the wayside, I guess.
Yeah. And I mean, it doesn't sound like there was any real, you know, animosity. It doesn't seem like, you know, there was that then. It seems to be okay. It just, it made sense for it to end naturally. But the reason I asked this, Tom, and I asked this on, I was on a podcast a couple of shows ago, but I asked the same thing to another musician. Would there be an opportunity for Cryocell to come back and do a show, do an album? Is there something left there to do? Would you like to revisit it? Or is it okay now? That's in the past and that's great and that's where it is and now we're moving on.
I think at the time, I was starting to talk to the other guys in the band again after what had happened. And it's basically, you know, like I say, not going into detail, but it's like burying the hatchet sort of thing, you know, cross water under the bridge shit, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
that kind of thing.
Yeah, of course.
Came to a point where I was trying to start a new project, which would eventually become carnal. And I was saying to that, one of the options I had, so I was going to say to the lads, would it be possible if I could just carry on the name? Because you guys have got your own projects on the go. You don't particularly want to revisit it. Maybe, you know, you might do in the future. Who knows? But at this point in time, you know, would it be sound? Would you be all right for me? You know, you get all the credits and stuff like that, because I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't stiff you down at recognition.
Yeah, it's not about that. Yeah.
You know what I mean? If I carried on with it, and the conversation just never kind of carried on after that. So, I mean, would I? I would. You know what I mean? I personally, myself, you know, even if it's just for old times, so you can see where it goes from there kind of thing. Yeah. I wouldn't mind doing that. Because I know our old guitarist in one of his newer projects actually re-released one of Cryo's songs in their own style.
Yeah.
I did that. So I'm quite tempted to revisit a song or two, maybe with Carnal. Yeah. I wouldn't be averse to that.
Maybe one of the things worth exploring is not necessarily a full set or album or kind of that sort of commitment, but is to go, well, no, during Carnal's set, pull up maybe one or two members of the old Cryo and do a song, you know, do maybe two or three songs.
It wouldn't be a bad show.
I'd like to see that, and the reason I talk about it is because I believe that there's a rich history of bands within the Northwest, and certainly in Liverpool and Merseyside scene, that maybe didn't get their fair shake because it was pre-big internet and pre-streaming service and stuff like that. And I believe there's still a rich sort of vein to be mined and stuff like that. Ogun are a good example of a band around that time, stopping. And they're better than they ever were. They're playing this week and it's going to be a great gig and what have you. And there's lots of bands that like, you know, I don't think got the fair shake of what was going on. I think Cryo were one of those bands where it's like, let's, you know, there's a mine to be mined there of great material. It also connects the fact that that's almost like a lost time, like that 10 years ago or so, is a lost time because it never was recorded because they didn't have camera phones and shit like that, or not many of them. It feels like, I'd like to see some of that, because I don't think that some of the metalheads of our particular area realise that that history exists, you know, and I think that's a shame.
Because I do remember that back in, it's like when we were playing Metal to the Masses years ago, back when we qualified for it. We did end up playing, it was actually Deified who'd actually officially one who got the official nod by Simon Hall, but because of the way the crowd blew up that night, he gave us a guest slot on the festival. So like, it's like I'd said to the lads at the time, it's like fair play to the Deified lads for, you know, getting the nods. They've always been, they've got brilliant talent behind them, can't fault them.
Amazing. But
we got given a guest slot. We actually impressed this guy that much that he said, I want you anyway. And it's like, wow, fucking hell. You know
Let's talk about that, because we've just had Bloodstock. So you go to Bloodstock as a guest slot. Talk about that then. You know, what was that like? You know, this is essentially your second band, if you will. You know, you're in another band for a cup of coffee, but this is the first of your band. How many shows have you done before you're at Bloodstock? How many shows?
The band officially started back in like 2014? We'd done about 10, maybe.
That's still
maybe
fucking nothing, is it? You know what I mean? It's 10 shows, of which, you know, you're still learning vocally, you're still finding your feet, and then you're at Bloodstock. What's that like?
The first three shows Cryo ever played were like within like a week and a half of each other, which was one of them was kind of like, whoa, you know what I mean? It was mad to wrap your head around. But it's kind of like there is video evidence of the Bloodstock set on YouTube, and you can tell my nerves are.
I will now watch that. I have not seen that.
I'm headbanging away. I'm doing my vocal thing.
Were you nervous? I mean, you say you can tell you were nervous. Were you nervous?
I was rooted to the spot. I literally could not move, because at first when we started the set, we had, you know, the travelling fans had come, you know, like the Liverpool lot who came to Bloodstock, and people who we know who were meeting us at Bloodstock who wanted to come show support. And it was after, because my anxiety on stage is, it can get quite bad sometimes, to the point where I don't open my eyes when I sing. I sing with my eyes closed. And all I heard after, I think it was like the third song ended, or the second or third song ended, we only had, say, about 100 people in front of us at the beginning. First song ended, second song ended. All I heard was Rich next to me into the microphone. Like, fucking hell, where did you lot come from? And I opened my eyes. There were people peering in from the entrance because they couldn't fit in the fucking tent. And I was like, shit the bed, what the fuck is it? You know, Raging Speedhorn's on right now. You know, there we haven't just stolen crowd from Raging Speedhorn. Please just tell me we have. We have. Oh shit. Okay. Fucking hell. And it was just like
that's an incredibly honest thing to say, that, you know, you suffer from nerves, and that's, you keep your eyes closed on stage because of that. You know, because that's, you know, fair play to you, you know, for saying that, and fair play to you for admitting that and saying, you know, the Bloodstock, you know, that was a real moment for you. Do you know, has that got better? Now you realise, look, you know, Tom, I'm here to tell you, you're a great metal vocalist. You're a great vocalist, the end. You know what I mean? No debate, you are. You know, and it's still amazing that I only realise now that when you played that set at Dark Earth, that you had your eyes closed as well. Is that still a thing?
It is still a thing. Although saying that, and it kind of like it comes in fits and starts. I'm trying to fight it at the minute. It's like I'm medicated for anxiety. I'm medicated for depression as well. Yeah. And at this Shrewsbury gig that we played last weekend, I'd forgotten to take my meds that day. Because it was that encapsulated with, we need to get stuff in the car, we need to get on the road, we need to be here by a certain time, soundcheck a certain time. Tablets went out the fucking window, and I was just like, it was only before we were about to go on, I went, oh my fuck, I've not had my medication. Oh shit, you know what I mean? Panic mode started getting in. But it actually stopped when Mike was right in front of me on a stand. And I just took a deep breath. I just took the mic off the stand, placed the stand sides of the stage. Second that mic was in my hand, I knew my feet were firmly planted on the stage. It's like grounding myself, you know. Right, I'm ready. Let's do this. You know what I mean? Kind of thing. I still do it. I do try and battle it. At Quarry at that gig, I was eyes open. When I was interacting with the crowd, I was staring people down as I was roaring into the crowd and shit like that. And I was proper trying to fucking make a decent effort of it. I'm trying to fight it every step of the way. And it's a hard fucking slog. It is. You know, any vocalist who suffers from the same thing and tells you you're any different is a fucking liar. And quite frankly, anxiety is a bastard, especially when you're a performing artist and you just want to give the best show you can. Yeah. You're there to entertain. That's all I want to do. I want to make people laugh. I want the room to start moving. That's all I want. If I can do that, even with my eyes shut, for fear of opening them for whatever I think is going to be beyond my eyelids at that point in time, then I've fucking won. If I can still do that, I've beaten that anxiety for that night. You know what I mean?
Is that what it is when you go on stage? Is the first battle, like for some artists, the first battle is getting the crowd close to the stage or making people put their hands in the air or whatever the fuck it may be. For you, is that first battle, that first step off the cliff and kind of going up and going to fight this and the inner demons? That's fascinating to me. That's like, you know that's something that, you know, a lot of people struggle to even admit that that's going on, you know, and that's, you know, that's incredible. And I think that, it sounds like that music is one form of medication for you, is one way of going, okay, this is how I'm going to get some stillness and some calmness in my mind and do this live. That's extraordinary.
It's like in between cryo ending and carnal forming, I tried like previous, I tried getting different people in and shit like this, and you know, for one reason or another, stuff just didn't work out. But yeah, it's like, at the time, I was going through a pretty bad depressive episode, especially with my anxiety as well. I was going through a pretty bad time with that. The job I was in was running me into the ground, so much I was hospitalized at one point.
Wow.
And fucking, if it wasn't for music being there, even in just the sense of just sticking earphones in and listening to my favorite artist, if I didn't have that, fucking game over, mate. Game over. Music's a fucking lifeline for me in every sense of the fucking word.
Yeah.
Even now that I'm back performing music as well, you have no idea fucking how much it means just to have people listening to us, even if it's just once, just going, oh no, yeah, that's pretty cool. That's enough for me. Everything else is a bonus. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm so happy I'm with the lads I've got as well, because it started off as a one-man project. I just thought, you know what? I can't get the musicians in. I'm just going to do it myself. So I bought a guitar and an amp, a microphone, started ripping drum loops off fucking Wiki Loops and started writing riffs to them. And then the next thing you know, I get a message through from a drummer. It was actually someone I've known for years. I'd known him. Last time I'd seen him was at a house party back in like 2007. That's how long ago it's been since I'd seen him. And he got in contact and went, yeah, I drum. What are you doing? And I gave him a couple of bands to listen to. And he just went, I'm in. I'll have that. I'm in on that. So me and him started practicing. We got another guitar. Our other guitarist, Cam, in. That was Dan, our drummer, who's phenomenal. Phenomenal fucking drummer. Looks like he can play fucking 300 BPM and look like he's half asleep. You know what I mean? He's fucking mad. Cam, our guitarist, I auditioned him the night after. It was my birthday night out the night before. I'd been to For the Love of Horror in Manchester. And I'd met Corey Taylor as part of my present, which was brilliant because he's one of my all-time favourite vocalists. And then I went on the lash when I got back to Liverpool. So I'm fucking half cut, stood there with this fucking Jackson, fucking Randy Rhodes, fucking trying to show him the riffs with a pair of sunglasses on in a dark room. That's how fucking grim it was because I was that hanging. We got Owen in, our other guitarist as well. He's only 20. He told us this not too long ago at a gig at the Alma, and he's the one who broke the guitar string.
Yeah.
He's fucking... That lad's going to go
great
far.
Player. Great player. Great player.
Absolutely phenomenal. Cam in his own way, he's phenomenal as well. Both of them, they work well, so well together. Everyone does. And Harry, our bassist as well, once he got through, we auditioned a couple of players and he came out on top. Harry also does backing vocals as well. He's got his own black metal project as well. And he's really good at fucking doing his own one-man thing. But when it comes to bass, when it comes to bass and vocals as well, fucking, it all just goes. It's like when you're learning how to drive and you're trying to figure out the different parts of the car, and one minute you just go, boom, it all just comes together one day. Hmm. And that's basically what happens with Carnal. Yeah. I've somehow gotten the right people in for this project who just fucking seem to appear out of the fucking asshole of nowhere.
Yeah.
And they all want the same thing. They all dig the same thing that everyone's in the band is doing. Mm. And everyone just gels to, it's almost too perfect. It's like it's not real. And at one point, someone's going to unplug me from the fucking Matrix and it's all just going to be a dream. You know?
Yeah.
That's the one fear I've got at the minute. But
I think it sounds like you're getting to a place where you know musically and kind of artistically what you want to do, and that will pull in people. You know, whether you're standing there moshing to fucking Hostile, and someone comes over to you being drunk and talking to someone at a gig, you know, it will. Those people will kind of gravitate towards you. You know, because you know what you want. You've got to, you know, you might not like this, but you are the de facto band leader, you know what I mean? And that's nothing wrong with that. It's a good thing. And you're starting to kind of, you know, get a grip of what you want to do artistically. I think that's, you know, I think that sounds... Yeah. What's great, certainly anybody listens to Carl Rott, and I will put links on the show as well, is that it feels very natural. It doesn't feel forced. It feels like it's very, very natural, very organic, and already only a handful of gigs in. Anybody that'll see you, the band playing, it looks like you are all in the same gang. It looks like you are all from the same ilk and what you're coming from the same point of view. And that's only going to lead to great music. That's only going to lead to great stuff because there's nothing in the way now. There's not a barrier going, so-and-so likes this and wants to do this, so-and-so likes this and wants to do that. You're having to compromise your vocals in some way. Now it's full steam ahead, you know, which is both exciting for me as a listener, but it's also, you know, it's supposed to be daunting as well because now let's write, let's get some songs, let's get an album. Where are we with that then?
Yeah, it's massively daunting. It is.
Yeah. In a good way.
It is in such a fucking good way. You are right. Yeah. But it's a case of shit the bed. I've gone from this trying to fucking struggle to write music by myself to having a full fucking band in every sense of the word. I always said, it's like when the band first started and I was integrating members in, I'll show them the riffs, I'll send them playthroughs of the stuff that I've written.
Yeah.
And the first thing I say to them is, treat this as a guideline.
Yeah.
Treat it as a guideline. This is just the basic of the most basic of riffs. Do what you want with it. Take your influence, do what you're a part of this now. Take your influence, do what you want with it. And that's how we've developed the sounds that we have to this day. It's not just a case of I wrote the riff, you have to do what I say kind of shit, because I could not do that even if you pointed a gun at my fucking head.
Yeah.
But it's a case of, I like the fact that everybody has brought their own individual influences. Like I say, Harry, the bassist, is more black metal orientated, shall we say. Cam and Owen, the guitarist, they're more thrash orientated and stuff like that. And even Dan loves everything from death metal to fucking improvised jazz. You know what I mean? Dan actually fucking plays in open mic nights all around town for people who need a drummer with Barry Sutton, who used to be the drummer for the Lars. He goes around playing with him just because it's an excuse for him to drum. Dan literally just wakes up, has his breakfast, sits behind his kit for a couple of hours and then until he gets bored and then goes to sleep and then repeats. It's as he says, is there's no such thing as talent. It's hard graft. You get out what you put in, that kind of thing. And I believe that wholeheartedly. And all these lads are fucking, since joining on, I've always said, right, this isn't about me now. This is us. When it started, it was about, you know, like, I've written these riffs, can you play them for me? But now it's, you've got your influences in. I want your input. I want everyone's fucking input. It's a democracy. It's not a fucking dictatorship. It's the one thing I will always hammer home is that. Yeah. And it's so, it's brilliant to see. Because like you say, you've seen like videos of us playing and shit like this. And you've seen us playing, obviously.
Yeah.
Where it looks like it looks natural. And me not seeing that, because I'm still struggling to comprehend how fast this is going at the minute, is... I look back at it now, it's like I looked at a video before and it was just like, I was seeing it and everyone's just like in sync. Everybody's in sync with each other. Everyone knows what to do at the right moment, at the right point in time. And I'm just watching it, just going, not to blow smoke up my own ass here, but this is fucking great. Jesus, I didn't realize we look like this, you know? Yeah. And it's just, it takes other people pointing it out because I don't see it. It's like there's certain gigs where I've played where I've just gone, ah, fuck, I think I fucked up a shitload there. You know, like a couple of gigs ago, everyone was just like, oh, no, I think I've done this. Oh, no, I think I've done that wrong. But afterwards, you get people coming up to you guys, oh, fucking phenomenal, fantastic. Oh, my God, that was so good. Thank you so much. And it's just like, we were shit. You know, in our heads, we're going, we were shit. And then we see video evidence a couple of days later and we go, oh, okay, maybe we weren't as shit as what we thought.
Yeah, Well, look, here's the thing, and this is fucking, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to clip a part of the show and put this out, this is fucking important. You are going to write, if not already, but it's coming, you are going to write a song from your perspective about dealing with the things that you're dealing with. That will be put out concert as a song, you'll play it live or put it on whatever. Someone who's dealing with that issue will get strength from the thing you've wrote.
Yeah, man.
You know that's going to happen in the same way that you did. It's important you understand that. And that's the wonderful cycle of metal, is that that's what's going to happen. Someone will listen to it. Someone will pick one of your songs and it will be the reason that they decide to not give up that day.
Yeah,
it's important shit. It's important shit. And that's coming because you're writing from a place of confidence. You're writing from a place of, you know, where you feel comfortable and you go, look, I'm going to show some more of myself. In the same way that Johnny Cash goes, I'm going to do a song that's got a really weird title about a really weird subject because deep down inside, it's really important what I want to say. And that's it. Yeah. If it hasn't been wrote already by yourself, it's coming. This is important shit. And that's why it's important to always write from your heart and your soul and about the things that you're dealing with, because you can speak from experience. And it's coming if it isn't already here. I mean, are we
there is actually one in the works. At the moment, there is one in the works to do with that. Because, like, if I can, whilst trying to battle my own demons in my head, if I can help someone else along the way, you know, if we as a band can help someone else along the way, be it through the riffs that Owen and Camel write, or the fucking blast beats that fucking Dan puts in at a certain point, or even whatever I write, or the way I sing it. If it helps, then fucking I'm happy. If I can help someone along the fucking way, if our music can get someone through a fucking shitty moment in their life, then fucking great. It's a massive fucking bonus. You know what I mean? It's brilliant, and it's given back to a community that has already given so much to bands, be they local or mainstream, the love that they have for whatever particular bands that they're into, it's given back to those fans in one way or another. And you know what? Fucking if I can, will help in any way, shape or form. If it helps clear my head by writing these lyrics out, but if those same lyrics help someone else, fucking great.
100% that will happen. 100%. 100% that will happen. You never know who's listening, and you never know whose favorite song is a song that you wrote that's track 4 on an album, and it's that, and that's the song that gets them through Thursday for them. You know, it's
exactly.
I mean, that happens.
I can't guarantee that the song is not gonna sound like, say, like a two-headed pig getting its asshole eviscerated by a fucking chainsaw. But if you look at the lyrics, it might not sound like I'm trying to battle my own demons. It sounds like more like I'm projecting them through my vocal cords whilst writing the more meaningful stuff down on paper.
Yeah.
So it might be one of them songs where it sounds all grim and grisly and there's fucking blast beats aplenty and shit like that. But if people do take the time to look at the actual lyrics themselves and then go through, and then it all clicks in their head. And if it does help someone, then that's my fucking that's me done for the day. That's me happy for that day. You know?
Yeah, beautiful. So, I mean, there's only sort of two real songs out there at the moment: the Skin and Pit and Human Shrapnel.
Yeah.
When's new music coming? How are we close to an album or a lot longer form player? Where are we?
We are at the moment. We've got a couple of gigs coming up this year. As anyone who's seen our Instagram will know, we've got a fair few gigs coming up this year. We are in talks with our management about sorting recording out, because we did get signed to Bitter Edge Entertainment recently. Nice guy called Alfred, who's totally on our level. He's one of the lads. He's great. He's really great, and he's helping us out trying to find a decent studio to go to start getting our music more professionally recorded. whether that's an EP or an actual full album remains to be seen just yet. Well, tickle our taste buds with a teaser there. There is new music coming. Just don't know what form it'll take just yet.
Because you've got 30-minute sets playing. The vast majority of that's new music then, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
The only way we can hear this new music is actually right now is going and seeing you live.
Pretty much, man. Yeah, pretty much. It's like, it's at the time, it was the only way we could only afford at the time to write.
Yeah.
So the rest of the stuff that, obviously, you say, like 25-30-minute set that we've got, we do throw like a cover in there every now and again and shit like that. But all of that's original music. It's all original music. It's just stuff that we haven't been able to, as of yet, record.
Yeah.
So it is, for the majority, yeah, I suppose, new music, yeah.
The reason I mention this, Tom, is that like we live in a climate where people are like, well, why the fuck would I go and see a live band when I can listen to their music via stream and watch a video? It's like, well, I'm saying now that if you want to hear anything else by Carl Roth, you're going to have to go and get off your arse and go to a fucking show. You know, and you're going to get to see songs way before anybody else hears them. And probably songs they're still becoming what they're going to become. So they may change their form from what they actually end up being. You know, that's exciting.
Exactly. There's fucking, it's part of the fucking charm of it, mate. It is truly fucking, it's like, oh, you want to hear some more stuff? Oh, I guess you're going to have to come down to one of our gigs.
You're going to have to come to a fucking show. It's as simple as that. And that's exciting to me then, because it's like someone saying a band's going to play a song and the only time you're ever going to see it is this one time and then you're never going to be able to see it again. It's like, it's a moment in time, and you're going to have that now, ladies and gentlemen, when you go to see Carl and Roth, and I'll put up links to all their shows that they're playing. You're going to get the chance to see this. That's incredibly exciting. You know, I've talked to a few bands recently. They're up and now moving on to, they're breaking through and they're doing big, big shows now, and you're never going to get to see them at these smaller venues. Now, ladies and gentlemen, is the time to get onto the Carl and Roth train and start to, I said before we came on the pod, I said to Tom, how big a fan I was of the band, because I've heard these other songs and I've heard how good it's getting. And I can't wait for other people to be standing next to me when they see that. And that's going to happen, my friend. That's going to happen. Listen, I don't know how long we've gone here. I knew it would take a long time. And there's fucking, we haven't even
20 to
touched the surface of stuff. But I'll definitely get Tom back on again, because there's so much stuff we need to cover. It's always a pleasure. You know, it was really good to see you at the Dark Earth show, and I will inevitably see you at some live shows in the next couple of weeks. Yeah, but ladies and gentlemen, apologies. Carl Roth.
Apologies, by the way, for the Dark Earth thing, for my drunken ravings. When I've had a few, I'm a motor mouth as it is.
I wouldn't have it any other way. I wouldn't have it any other way.
But it gets worse when I'm pissed.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the wonderful Tom from Carl Roth. Thank you for coming on the show, sir.
Thank you so much for having me, Cooper. It's been an absolute delight to talk to you, mate. It genuinely has.
That was Tom there from Carl Roth. And I'll put some links, as always, to their material. I strongly suggest you check them out. They're playing some shows coming up soon as well, which I really want to get to and kind of see what's going on with that. I have some special announcements. I keep teasing these announcements, don't I? There's some special announcements coming up very, very soon as I kind of put the finishing touches to them, some very exciting things in November, and I'll keep you posted on everything that happens with that across all the socials. As always, you know, if you're in a new band, or even an established band, or an old band, or a fucking any band, or even if you're just a guitar player, if you're just a drummer, if you're just this, and just if you're a musician of any kind, if you're crew, or is anybody you want to see on the Spoken Metal show you want to hear me talk to, please, your DMs are always open. Get in touch and we'll make it happen. This show is for you, this show is for the scene, the show is for all, as exactly as metal is. I want to thank you for listening to the show, and as always, I'll see you at the show.